work. Time in the lower levels had lost all meaning. Without the sun to mark the passing of days, existence had compressed into an endless, agonizing cycle of fluorescent light and claustrophobic shadow. For Nicole, hell was no longer a biblical concept. It was a concrete room smelling of bleach, old copper, and the sweet, sickly stench of necrotic flesh. And the devil was wearing a pristine white lab coat. Dr. Wilhelm Krenner stood at the stainless steel workbench he had demanded she move from the upper medical bays down into the skunk farm's containment area. He was holding a glass pipette, transferring a murky amber fluid into a row of test tubes. He moved with an excruciating, deliberate slowness. Every motion was exaggerated, drawn out to the absolute limits of patience. Nicole stood 10 feet away, her M4 rifle slung across her chest, her hands resting on the grip, her legs ached with a deep throbbing fire. She had been standing in this exact spot for 7 hours today. Or maybe it was 9. The digital clock on the wall was broken, stuck at a perpetually blinking 12 o'clock.
"The viscosity of the spinal fluid is problematic," Krenner murmured, not looking up from his work.
He set the pipette down and picked up a small magnifying glass, peering at a slide for a full 2 minutes without blinking.
"The viral mutation rate in the subterranean cold seems to have thickened the proteins. It requires a more delicate touch."
"You said you had a viable culture yesterday," Nicole said,
her voice a dry rasp. Her throat felt coated in dust.
"I said I had a promising culture, Miss Bennett," Krenner corrected smoothly, finally turning his head to look at her. His eyes were bright, filled with a malicious amusement. "Science is not a vending machine. You do not insert a gun to my head and immediately receive a cure in the dispenser tray. It requires patience, something your military pedigree seems to have severely neglected."
Nicole tightened her grip on the rifle. She knew he was stalling. She knew he was taking hours to perform tasks that should have taken minutes. But she lacked the virological expertise to call his bluff. He held all the cards, and he was making sure she felt the weight of her ignorance every single second.
"Just keep working," she ground out.
Krenner sighed dramatically, turning back to the table.
"I am working, though I must admit my cognitive functions are significantly impaired by the substandard caloric intake you provide."
Nicole reached into the canvas bag at her feet, pulled out a brown plastic MRE pouch, and tossed it onto the concrete floor near his feet. It landed with a heavy slap.
"Chili Mac," she said flatly. "Eat it while it's cold."
Krenner looked down at the foil packet as if it were a fresh pile of excrement.
"Fascinating how the American military managed to synthesize food that tastes entirely of despair. I don't suppose your busting little utopia upstairs has managed to grow any fresh produce. A tomato, perhaps. Some arugula."
"Eat the MRE or starve, Krenner. I don't care."
"Oh, but you do,"
Krenner chuckled, nudging the packet with the toe of his polished shoe.
"If I starve, the cure starves. If I die, you lose your only chance at redemption. We are tethered together, you and I, bound by the sins of the father."
Nicole's jaw locked.
"Don't."
"Don't what?" Krenner asked innocently, picking up a rack of glass test tubes. He held them up to the light, inspecting the amber liquid.
"Don't mention Colonel Bennett? Why? Are we pretending he wasn't the architect of his own demise? Of everyone's demise?"
"He was trying to stop you," Nicole said, the lie tasting like ash on her tongue.
"He was trying to weaponize me, Nicole," Krenner laughed, a sharp barking sound. "Your father was a man of breathtaking mediocrity, a pencil pusher in a uniform who thought he could harness the power of a god with a DARPA grant and a non-disclosure agreement. He lacked vision. He lacked the stomach for the reality of evolution."
Krenner began to pace slightly behind the table, still holding the rack of delicate glass tubes.
You know, when the containment protocols failed in the primary lab, he didn't try to save the researchers? Krenner said, his voice dropping to a conversational, almost intimate volume.
He tried to save the hard drives. I remember watching him. The alarms were blaring, the subjects were breaking through the reinforced glass, and the great Colonel Bennett was sweating through his uniform, frantically ripping cables out of the server racks. He looked like a panicked rat on a sinking ship.
Nicole's vision swam with red. Her heart hammered against her ribs like a trapped bird.
Shut up.
And then, when he realized he couldn't take the data, he came to me, Krenner continued, ignoring her entirely. He stopped pacing and looked directly into Nicole's eyes. He begged me, Nicole. He actually got on his knees, the great military man weeping like a child, begging me to initiate the thermal purge and burn us all alive. He didn't have the courage to live in the new world, and he didn't have the courage to die on his own terms. I said shut up!
Nicole crossed the room in three massive strides. She didn't even raise her rifle. She grabbed Krenner by the lapels of his white coat, lifted him off his toes, and slammed him backward against the concrete wall. The impact was brutal. The air rushed out of Krenner's lungs in a violent whoosh. But as he hit the wall, Krenner opened his hands. The rack of test tubes fell to the floor. The glass shattered into a thousand glittering shards. The amber liquid, hours of agonizingly slow, supposedly crucial work, splattered across the concrete and pooled in the grout lines. Nicole froze, staring down at the broken glass. Krenner coughed, catching his breath, and then a slow, wide smile spread across his face. He looked down at the mess, then back up at Nicole, whose hands were still white-knuckled in his lapels.
Oops, Krenner whispered, his eyes gleaming with triumphant malice. Clumsy me. Slippery hands.
Nicole's breathing was ragged. She wanted to crush his windpipe. She wanted to draw her sidearm and empty the magazine into his chest. Her muscles trembled with the sheer, overwhelming urge to commit murder.
You did that on purpose, she hissed, shaking him so hard his head cracked lightly against the wall. You sabotaged it.
You assaulted me, Krenner corrected, his smile never wavering. The sudden kinetic force disrupted my motor control. A tragic accident. I suppose, yes, I suppose we'll just have to start the incubation process all over again. That sets us back at least, 3 days.
He threw his head back and laughed. It was a terrible, grating sound. He fed on her anger. He drank it in like water. He knew exactly where the lines were, and he danced on them, turning his captivity into a psychological torture chamber where he was the warden and she was the prisoner. Nicole shoved him away in disgust. Krenner stumbled but caught his balance on the edge of the workbench, still chuckling as he brushed the wrinkles out of his coat.
Clean it up, Nicole ordered, her voice trembling with suppressed rage.
I'm afraid I cannot, Krenner sighed, looking at the broken glass. That fluid was derived from the cerebral cortex of our dear friend Abner over there, and I've completely exhausted his viable tissue.
He pointed across the aisle to the opposing cage, where the withered gray-skinned corpse of Abner Friedman lay slumped against the bars. The zombie had stopped snapping hours ago. Its jaw was dislocated, hanging at a grotesque angle, and its limbs were finally still. It had starved, even by the virus's impossible standards, degrading into true, final death.
The mutation renders the brainstem necrotic after a certain period of isolated animation, Krenner explained casually, as if discussing the lifespan of a fruit fly. Abner is spent. Francis beside him is little more than soup inside his skull at this point. If I am to restart the culture, I need fresh tissue.
He looked at Nicole, his dark eyes locking on to hers.
I need a new subject, Ms. Bennett, and since you refuse to let me harvest from the thriving little community upstairs, you'll have to fetch me one from my library.
Nicole stared at him, the reality of the request sinking in like a stone in deep water.
The train.
The armored locomotive was parked half a mile away in the deepest section of the mineshaft, completely sealed. Inside its reinforced boxcars were hundreds of the infected. Getting close to it was dangerous enough. Opening it to extract a single specimen without letting the rest of the horde pour out into the tunnels was akin to suicide.
"You're lying," Nicole said. "You have enough tissue samples in the centrifuge."
"Check them yourself if you know how to operate an electron microscope," Krenner challenged smoothly. "Without fresh active viral cultures, my work is halted. We can stand here and stare at each other for the next decade, or you can go to the train and get me what I need. The choice is yours, Commander."
Nicole looked at the shattered glass on the floor, then at Krenner's smug face. He was punishing her. He was forcing her to risk her life for a setback he had intentionally caused. She turned on her heel and walked to the heavy steel door of the skunk farm. She pulled a ring of keys from her belt, her hands moving with rigid, robotic precision.
"Get in the cage," she ordered.
Krenner smirked.
"Going somewhere?"
"In the cage, now."
She unspooled her rifle, leveling it at his chest. The safety clicked off, loud in the quiet room. Krenner raised his hands in mock surrender and sauntered across the room. He stepped into his designated holding cell, turning around to face her as she slammed the heavy iron door shut and slid the padlock into place.
"I prefer the subjects from the third car back," Krenner called out as Nicole marched toward the exit. "They were exposed to a slightly lower temperature during transit. The tissue preserves better. Do try not to damage the cranium when you subdue it."
Nicole hit the heavy steel door, stepped out into the corridor, and locked the skunk farm from the outside. The walk to the train tunnel was the longest half mile of her life. With every step away from the lit containment wing, the air grew colder and heavier. The emergency lighting in this section of the mine was failing. Patches of absolute, suffocating darkness stretched between the flickering yellow bulbs. She carried her M4, but she had also stopped at a utility closet to grab a heavy iron catch pole, a 10-foot pole with a retractable steel wire loop at the end, typically used for wrangling feral animals. She rounded the final curve, and there it was, the Iron Horse. The massive black locomotive sat dormant in the gloom, a silent armored leviathan. But the cars behind it were not silent. As Nicole approached, the smell hit her first, a physical wall of putrefaction, the concentrated stench of hundreds of rotting bodies trapped in a confined space. Then came the sound. It was a low, ceaseless murmur of movement, the scratching of thousands of fingernails against steel, the dull thuds of bodies pressing against the doors. Nicole stopped beside the third boxcar. Her heart was beating so hard it hurt her ribs. The heavy sliding door was secured by a massive exterior latch. She had to open it just enough to slip the loop in, snag a subject, and haul it out, all while holding back the crushing weight of the horde pressing against the inside. It was a maneuver that required three people. She was alone. She leaned her rifle against the stone wall of the tunnel, within arm's reach. She gripped the catch pole in her left hand, and with her right, she reached up and grabbed the heavy iron handle of the boxcar latch. She took a deep breath of the foul air, braced her boots against the gravel ballast, and pulled. The latch groaned, thick with rust and disuse. She threw her entire body weight backward. With a harsh screech of metal, the locking bar gave way. Instantly, the heavy sliding door bucked outward, driven by the sheer pressure of the bodies inside. Nicole cursed, slamming her shoulder against the steel to keep it from rolling wide open. The force was staggering. It felt like trying to hold closed the gates of a dam. A gap opened, maybe 8 inches wide. The darkness inside the car shifted. A pale, rotting hand shot through the gap, fingers clawing frantically in the air, the jagged fingernails scraping across the steel door. Then a face pressed into the opening. It was a man, his jaw missing entirely, his milky eyes rolling in their sockets, A guttural, wet hiss erupted from his ruined throat as he saw her. More hands appeared, shoulders slammed against the gap, widening it to a foot. Nicole's boots slipped on the gravel as she fought to hold the door. They were stronger than they had any right to be, driven by a mindless, mechanical frenzy.
"Come here, you son of a bitch!" Nicole grunted, her muscles burning.
She thrust the catch pole through the gap. The steel loop hit the jawless man in the chest. He snapped at it blindly. Nicole twisted the pole, angling the wire loop up and over the creature's head. With a sharp yank, she pulled the trigger on the pole's handle. The steel wire zipped shut, biting deeply into the rotting flesh of the zombie's neck. The creature thrashed violently, its hands flying up to claw at the wire.
"Got you," Nicole hissed.
Now came the impossible part. She had to pull him out while closing the door on the others. She stepped back, hauling on the pole with all her strength. The jawless man was dragged through the gap, stumbling and flailing as he fell onto the gravel ballast outside the train. But as he fell, the pressure on the door vanished. The gap widened instantly. Another zombie, a woman in a shredded business suit, lunged into the opening, her teeth snapping inches from Nicole's face. Nicole dropped the catch pole, abandoning the lassoed zombie on the ground. She threw her entire weight into the sliding door, screaming with the exertion. The heavy steel rolled forward, but the woman in the suit was already halfway out, her torso wedged in the opening. The door slammed shut against the woman's ribs with a sickening crunch. Ribs shattered, but the zombie didn't feel pain. It only shrieked, its arms reaching wildly for Nicole's throat, its teeth gnashing the air. Nicole grabbed the heavy iron latch handle. She brought it down like a hammer, smashing it directly into the side of the wedged zombie's skull. Dark, coagulated blood sprayed across her face, but she didn't stop. She hit it again and again. With a final sickening crack, the skull caved in. The creature went limp, sliding downward. Nicole put her boot against the dead thing's chest, kicked it back into the dark interior of the car, and shoved the heavy steel door closed with a final desperate heave. She threw the locking latch into place just as a dozen bodies slammed against the inside, the metal booming like a thunderclap. She collapsed back against the stone wall of the tunnel, sliding down to the gravel, her chest heaving, her lungs burning. She was covered in sweat and black blood. A few feet away, the jawless man she had lassoed was writhing on the ground, the steel wire cutting into his neck. He was trying to stand, his dead eyes fixed on her. Nicole reached over, grabbed her M4, and stood up on shaking legs. She picked up the handle of the catch pole, dragging the thrashing creature to its feet.
"Walk,"
she gasped, giving the pole a vicious yank that nearly decapitated the corpse. The journey back to the skunk farm was a nightmare of endurance. The zombie fought her every step of the way, lunging, snapping, trying to turn back on her. Her arms felt like lead. By the time they reached the heavy steel doors of the containment wing, she was running purely on adrenaline and spite. She punched the code into the keypad, the door swinging open. She dragged the snarling creature into the harsh fluorescent light of the room. Krenner was standing at the front of his cage, his hands resting casually on the crossbars, watching her with a raised eyebrow. Nicole didn't say a word. She dragged the zombie to an empty holding cage, wrestled the door open, and threw the creature inside. She hit the quick release on the catch pole, yanked the steel loop free, and slammed the cage door shut, locking it with a heavy padlock. She turned away, leaning over the workbench, gripping the stainless steel edges as she fought to catch her breath. Her hair was matted with sweat and gore. Her hands were bruised and bleeding from the catch-pole wire.
"Bravo," Krenner said slowly, offering a slow, sarcastic golf clap from inside the cage. "A truly impressive display of brute force, Miss Bennett. The specimen appears largely undamaged. I commend your wrangling skills."
Nicole ignored him, focusing on her breathing. In, out. In, out.
"You know," Krenner continued, his voice taking on a thoughtful, mocking lilt, Watching you drag that filthy thing in here covered in its fluids, it does make one wonder about the margin of error. You are very careful, yes, but the virus only needs a microscopic vector, a scratch, a splash of blood in the eye. Nicole closed her eyes, squeezing them shut against the harsh light. What happens to me if you get infected, Nicole? Krenner asked, stepping closer to the bars of his cage. If the fever takes you down here in the dark, it would be a tragedy, of course. But if you turn and you wander just a little too close to this cage, I could possibly reach through these bars and snatch those keys right off your belt. He smiled, his teeth white and sharp in the fluorescent glare. Then I could let myself out, and I could lock you in. You'd make a fascinating test subject, Nicole. I wonder if the Bennett arrogant survives the necrosis of the frontal lobe. Nicole pushed off the table. She unslung her rifle, walked directly up to his cage, and slammed the heavy metal barrel against the iron bars, mere inches from his face. Krenner didn't flinch. He didn't even blink. He just stared at the barrel of the gun and then up into her exhausted, furious eyes. And he laughed. It was the laugh that broke her. She felt the last tether of her sanity snapping, fraying into nothing. She lowered the rifle, her hands shaking, and backed away from the cage. She couldn't fight him anymore. Not today. She walked over to a small canvas cot tucked into the far corner of the room, as far from the cage as possible. She sat down heavily, resting her face in her hands. She needed sleep. She hadn't slept more than 2 hours at a time in a week, but how could she sleep with him watching her, with the jawless zombie gnashing its teeth in the cage across the room? Before she could lie down, a heavy rhythmic knock echoed through the room. It came from the main steel door, the one she had locked from the inside. Nicole's head snapped up. Nicole, it's Sam. The voice was muffled through the thick steel, but it carried the unmistakable tone of a man reaching the end of his rope. Nicole stared at the door. Her first instinct was to ignore it, to curl up on the cot and disappear. But Sam knocked again, louder this time. Nicole, I know you're in there. I'm not leaving until you talk to me. She stood up slowly, her joints popping in protest. She glanced at Krenner. He was watching the door with intense interest, like a patron at a theater waiting for the second act. Stay quiet, Nicole threatened, pointing a shaking finger at him. Silent as the grave, Commander, Krenner mocked, pantomiming, zipping his lips. Nicole walked to the heavy steel door and threw the deadbolt. The heavy steel slab swung inward, opening just enough for her to stand in the gap, blocking Sam's view of the room behind her. Sam stood in the dimly lit corridor. He looked clean. He looked rested. He looked like a man who belonged to the world of the living upstairs, a world Nicole felt entirely disconnected from. What is it, Sam? Nicole asked, her voice flat, actively suppressing the tremor of exhaustion. Sam looked at her, his eyes widening slightly as he took in her appearance, the dark circles, the pale skin, the smear of dried black blood on her cheek from the train yard. He hesitated, his rehearsed speech faltering. I came to tell you about tomorrow, Sam started, his voice defensive but laced with a deep, confused concern. We had a meeting. With the core group. Ruby, Paul, the others. Nicole didn't react. She just stared at him, a dead-eyed sentinel guarding a tomb. I decided, Sam corrected himself, that we have a stalemate. You want the valley abandoned. The people don't want to leave. So we're holding a town hall tomorrow, at noon, in the auditorium. A town hall? Nicole repeated. The words felt utterly meaningless. They were playing house while the world burned. A vote, Sam clarified, shifting uncomfortably. We're going to let the people decide. If they want to come back inside, I'll order the clear teams to dismantle the barricades. If they want to stay, then we stay, and we focus on fortifying the wooden walls. Nicole felt a hollow, aching emptiness in her chest. A vote. They were going to stand in a circle and take a poll on suicide. You're asking them to vote on whether or not they want to die, Sam, Nicole said quietly.
I'm asking them to vote on how they want to live, Sam countered, his voice rising, echoing down the empty corridor.
I want you there, Nicole. I want you to make your case to them. Tell them why you think the mountain is better. And then, I want you to listen to them. I want us to figure this out together.
Nicole looked down at her hands. The catch-pole wire had sliced a deep groove across her palm. It was bleeding, sluggishly. She shoved her hands into her pockets.
Tell them why you think the mountain is better.
She couldn't tell them. She couldn't say the name Krenner. She was trapped, entirely alone, holding the door shut on hell while the people she loved played democracy on the front lawn.
You don't understand what you're dealing with, Nicole whispered.
Then explain it to me, Sam pleaded, stepping forward, pressing his hand against the heavy steel frame.
Talk to me, Nicole. Why are you down here? Why did you lock me out? Let me help you.
For a fleeting second, she wanted to. She wanted to step aside, let Sam see the monster in the cage, and let Sam put a bullet in his head. She wanted the burden gone. But if Krenner died, the cure died. Her father's legacy became permanent.
You can't help me, Sam, she said softly.
She pushed the heavy steel door, closing the gap.
Nicole, wait, Sam said, his hand bracing against the metal. Are you coming tomorrow? Will you accept the vote?
Nicole looked at him, feeling 1,000 years old.
Do what you have to do, Sam.
She shoved the door with the last dregs of her strength. It slammed shut with a deafening boom, cutting off Sam's face. She threw the deadbolt, the sharp clunk echoing in the skunk farm, and leaned her forehead against the cold metal. From behind her, the slow, rhythmic sound of a sarcastic golf clap started up again.
Bravo, Krenner called out from his cage.
A truly stirring performance, the tragic hero misunderstood by her flock. It brings a tear to the eye.
Nicole didn't turn around. She just squeezed her eyes shut.
A town hall, Krenner mused, his voice dripping with condescension. Democracy can be so terribly messy, can't it? It always interferes with such well-laid plans. It assumes the herd knows what's best for it, a fatal flaw in the human condition.
Nicole turned slowly. She looked at Krenner standing in his cage, clean, arrogant, and entirely in control. She looked at the jawless zombie thrashing in the cell next to him. She walked over to the main breaker switch on the wall.
Get in your bed, Krenner, she said, her voice completely devoid of life.
I'm not tired, Krenner smiled.
I didn't ask if you were tired.
Nicole grabbed the breaker handle and pulled it down. The harsh fluorescent lights died instantly. The skunk farm plunged into absolute, impenetrable darkness.
Wait, Krenner's voice snapped, suddenly losing its arrogant lilt.
The darkness was total.
Turn the lights back on. I need the lights to monitor the incubation.
You said it takes 3 days. Nicole's voice floated out of the blackness, cold and hard.
Monitor it in the dark.
She felt her way blindly to the corner of the room, her boots shuffling against the concrete. She found the edge of the canvas cot and collapsed onto it. She didn't take off her boots. She didn't take off her tactical vest. She simply laid her rifle across her chest and pulled her knees up tight.
Turn them on, Nicole,
Krenner demanded, his voice echoing from the bars. Nicole didn't answer. She closed her eyes. The darkness was suffocating, but it was better than looking at him. In the pitch black, the sounds amplified, the drip of a leaky pipe, the hum of the ventilation system, and from the cage across the room, the ceaseless wet snapping of dead teeth against iron bars. It was the lullaby of the new world, and Nicole drifted into fitful, nightmare-choked sleep, praying she wouldn't wake up.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening to Deadland. The outbreak is spreading and we want to hear from you. Leave a voicemail letting us know your weapon of choice, your ultimate survival strategy, or just hit us with your most terrifying zombie impression. We might play it on a future episode. Speak your brains out after the beep.